I want to thank everyone who has led us already in worship today. I want to thank each person who is here today. Welcome again to every visitor. We're glad you're here. Well, about a year ago, our family was traveling home from Indiana. We'd taken a vacation there to see my mom. And in this bag was, for some reason, a jar of pancake syrup. And for some reason, that jar of pancake syrup tipped. It still smells like it inside. Now, my analogy for today, a jar of honey, is not pancake syrup, but I bet you can guess the connection. They're both quite sticky. I invite us today to imagine that this honey is like gospel hope. Honey and hope are both sticky. For months now in my preaching, every scripture passage has focused on what God is doing and not what we are to do in response. Now, today, after months of this, today's passage has an instruction. Did you catch it? Verse 23, do not move from the hope which has been held out for you. Our instruction is to adhere ourselves, to connect ourselves, to attach ourselves, to get stuck to hope. That means hope is far more important than what we realize. Out of all the things the Apostle Paul could have said to the people of Colossae, they had been deceived, they'd been mistaught about Jesus. He shares these huge, expansive concepts and words, and it was likely a hymn that already existed. Maybe Paul adapted it a bit here and there, but it would have been a song that they were familiar with already. And he's naming what the early church believed about Jesus, that Jesus is the firstborn of all creation, that in him all things hold together. And then he says, in essence, stick to the gospel hope that you've been given. At Zion, God has been growing our tenacity in sticking with our gospel hope. How do I know? Because on April 30, Lori Friesen emailed Zion, inviting the congregation to sign up to transport two young adult women who had just recently moved here from Afghanistan to the new job that they had gotten at VMRC. They needed transportation to and from their job, a total of 58 rides. There were people that said, oh, it can't be done. Your hope proved otherwise. And hope is sticky. A few people believed, and then a few more people believed, and pretty soon the whole church is marveling at what God can do through a few people that have gospel hope. Now let's switch gears a moment. A distinctive value in our Anabaptist faith is that how Jesus lived is how we are to live. Mennonites take this seriously. We do this well, and it's good. The story that's, let me tell you about the Martyr's Mirror. In case you don't know, it is a collection of stories of suffering from the time of Christ all the way through into the 1600s. And it's by people who wanted their lives to line up with Jesus. They wanted their lives to match, to be hooked, to be stuck with Jesus. They were people that had real hope. So I learned a story in Martyr's Mirror this week about Hans Braille. Hans based the way he lived on how Jesus lived. And I think he must have had gospel hope to persevere the way he did. And I want to share it with you so that we keep learning from our history. Here's his condensed story. It was 1557. Thousands of Christians had gathered throughout Switzerland and Germany to devote themselves to Christ without concern for their own lives. And Hans was traveling through Switzerland when he ran into a judge and his actuary. "Where are you going? And what have you been doing here?" Hans was honest. "I've been visiting with my brothers." "And by your brothers, do you mean the rebaptizers?" Again, Hans chose honesty. "Yes," he replied. Hans was arrested and put into prison. Multiple times he was questioned, ordered to recant, and sent back to prison. Days went by. Hans was threatened that he would be tortured if he didn't rat out his friends. When Hans was brought to the rack, which was a torture device, he laid down on it. The executioner attached the ropes to his hands and stretched him. Spectators cried at what they saw. On and on, they tortured him, tried to get information from him, and lied about him. Does that remind you of Jesus? Hans' response was to smile at them. He said, "I will bear whatever God allows you to do. Do you understand that you can do nothing to me except what God allows?" They stuck Hans in a deep, dark, and filthy tower. He couldn't see the sun or the moon. He couldn't tell if it was day or night. There were rats in his tower that tried to eat his food and that drowned in his pitcher of water. One foot and one hand were put in the stocks, and he stayed that way for 37 weeks, where he was mocked and laughed at. And after a conversation between Hans and the actuary, the person who was responsible for his suffering, the actuary died in the middle of the night of guilt and shame over what he'd done. And that same night, a hope came to Hans's mind. A hope that he would return to his brothers and to his church. The next morning, a servant told him that the actuary had died during the night. And after 2 years in prison, Hans was sent to a slave ship. He had to learn how to walk again. The servant assigned for the journey to take him to the ship. When they stopped at an inn, the servant got drunk, passed out, at which point Hans opened the door, locked it behind him, opened the next door, locked it behind him, and returned to his brothers and the church. Now hear this conclusion from Martyr's Mirror. "For this it may be seen how God can give to those who cleave, who get stuck, my words, who cleave to God with a true heart, giving much strength and patience in suffering through their strong faith, which would otherwise be impossible." That's the value of hope. Desmond Tutu said, "Hope is being able to see that there is light despite all of the darkness." Certainly there is much wrong and chaotic in the world, and yet our instruction, our living trying to match it up to Jesus, is to be people who cling, who get stuck with hope. So what is this gospel hope? In one word, Jesus. Remember, the people in the forgotten town that Paul was writing to had been told false teachings of Jesus, and yet here is what Paul and the early church believed. Jesus is God's image. Jesus is creator and the purpose of all. The church is head. Jesus is supreme. Jesus is reconciling all things. Jesus presents us unblemished and free from accusation. So let's break this down. How does this description of who Jesus is give us hope for our lives today? Well, let's take the first one. Jesus is God's image. Mennonites care deeply about this theology. If you've had moments of confusion and discouragement this month, like I have, times where it is difficult to understand what God is doing, this verse says God is visible in Jesus. If you want to see God, Jesus is God's reflection. Jesus is still living and available, working and available to be seen. A second reason for hope today, because of all that Jesus is Jesus is creator of all. That means every person here, every person online is chosen, wanted, valuable. That means each person has a purpose for Jesus. And even more staggering, every person in the world was created by Jesus and for Jesus, even the ones we struggle to get along with. Which takes us to the last reason for hope that we're going to think about from this passage today. Jesus is reconciling to himself all things, not some things, not partially, all things. Some of us are in relationships that we don't know if they are ever going to get better. Some of us are deeply concerned for this planet and the sustainability of all creatures on it. Some of us are hurting for the diseases and the injustices of our neighbors here and around the world. And yet, if we are able to stick ourselves to this gospel hope, we have a promise that is evident all in Scripture from beginning to end, that Jesus is reconciling all creation. That's lasting hope right there. We aren't in literal prisons with rats and torture. Our absence of hope creates its own torture. God's heart for us, even when we've gone astray, is not condemnation. Jesus presents us to God as holy and free from accusation. God's heart for us is reconciliation. I want to close with one or two last stories of reconciliation and of hope. A few months ago, a prayer ministry began at Zion. And one person said, "What happens if no one comes?" Not as a marker of discouragement or failure, but because they were concerned about the people leading it. How would they feel if no one comes? Several of us met this past week to pray with someone who requested prayer. And if anybody here is interested in having a circle of care surround you in prayer, talk with Monica Campanieri. She will coordinate that for you. Here's what the person wrote back to us the day after we prayed this week. "I wanted to let you know that I felt a shift already in my spirit as I laid my head on the pillow this evening. I went right to sleep, and I slept almost all through the night. I can't remember when I ever slept this soundly. It felt so incredibly good to wake up more refreshed to face another day. This person and their spouse have been navigating some recent difficulties in their relationship, and that morning they talked together for 3 hours. They write, "It was eye-opening how the Lord moved during this time together and how we were able to hold each other's story with tender care. I shared some of the visions from last night, which was helpful to remind each of us that we are on the same page. We each prayed for insight into each other's heart and that God would show us how to continue this journey together. This feels like a huge breakthrough." A few days ago, the person continues, "I dug peonies that my grandmother gave to my mother and she to me. They were still in buckets on the porch where we sat this morning. And one bucket had huge buds that I thought, now that I had disturbed them, they probably won't bloom. Well, as we sat on the porch this morning, two of them began to open up. And I wish I had a camera with time lapse because I could almost watch those blooms open. I thought, here is that ugly black 5-gallon bucket with those poor forlorn plants that I can only pray will survive. And there, right in front of my eyes, were these beautiful blooms slowly opening. Such beauty and blessing in a pretty sad place, disturbed, in the middle of transition, without proper stability, there is hope and promise." End quote. Oh, sorry, one more sentence. "I truly felt God's love binding up my broken heart." Make no mistake, Zion, Jesus is all about reconciliation. Jesus offers us gospel hope. I'll share with you one last quick story. Some of you know that in my time with God, I have a little notebook where I write down various things. And this time it was a time of reflection that I wrote this morning. And the context for this is on Thursday, my daughter Kate, who's a senior, injured her head. We have a piece of exercise equipment that stores clothing, if any of you know what that's like. And she bumped her head on it very badly. She was very concerned. We were very concerned. She was concerned about a possible concussion. My daughter has breathed, lived soccer for 4 years now. That day they had a game. The next day she was not allowed to go to practice because of her headaches that she was having. They were concerned for a concussion. The semifinal game was yesterday. She was concerned that her season was over. They had a semifinal game yesterday. If they win, if they didn't win, would she be able to play in the final game or not? Here's what I wrote this morning. Think about reconciliation and hope. The difference of one day. She got to play. I know each moment might be the last. In this season of endings and beginnings. I can't read what I've written because of my tears. I am reminded that this world is not what we were made for. The endings and the heartbreak are sad. They are not final. And play she did.